Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am truly honored to share the microphone with the most interesting people. Now, these are people who are business leaders. They may be web developers, authors, speakers, small business owners, but they have wonderful stories to share, and they are here to freely share their journeys, their business wisdom, their tips, and actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. In fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was recently written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to now and has been mentioned on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. Our topic today is an important one, business owners and their most critical skill, with my guest Carl Gould. Carl Gould is a business growth expert who advises organizations to get to the next level. He's an entrepreneur who built three multi-million dollar businesses by the age of 40, and his consulting firm has mentioned the launch of over 5,000 businesses in 35 countries, and his team of mentor coaches have conducted over 75,000 sessions with entrepreneurs and executives worldwide. He has advised over 100 of the Inc. 500 fastest growing companies and has written seven books, on the subject of business strategy, leadership, and personal growth, and has also co-authored Blueprint of Success with Stephen R. Covey and Ken Blanchard. He also has a podcast called Quit and Go Rich. Quit and Get Rich. I listen to it periodically, every chance I get. It's a weekly radio program, and today he is going to share his insights from working with the top companies around the world. Carl, good morning. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio.
Hey, Denise, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, you know, we have a lot of mutual friends, and I hear so much about you. It's like, why have I not interviewed this man before? So here we are.
It's a small world, but we keep missing each other. But we figured out a way to get together this time around. So I'm psyched to be able to connect with you and your audience.
Oh, well, thank you. Listen, before we get started, tell our audience a bit about yourself that I may have missed in that kind of brief intro.
Well, you know, one of the slogans or identity statements we use in our business is that we were you before we became us. And what we mean by that is, and what I mean by that is, I started my entrepreneurial career very early. I am an entrepreneur. I don't just talk about entrepreneurship. I actively run a company, and I've run a number of companies over the years. And I started out going to school for accounting and finance. I had a pretty bad leg injury in college and had to leave school, which led me, the short story is, it led me to launch my first business when I was 18 years old. And so I grew that business and then sold it after 6 years, and then started a construction company and grew that business until 2004 and sold that business. And the one I have today, I started in 2002, and we are I've been doing that ever since. And so I'm big on practicality and ideas being actionable. I mean, I love great ideas, and I love theorizing and enjoying that back and forth of exchanging great ideas. At the same time, at the end of that, I want to take action, I want to get results, and I want to make things happen. And so, this will be very, very practical in our discussion, I'm sure.
That works for me. I'm about as right-brained as left brain as it come. My right brain, I retired some years ago when I figured out that it was messy and didn't really net me anything. I'm not joking. So I took a long look at the decisions that I was making, and I said, you know, this isn't working for me. And I packed up and I moved into my very clean left brain. You know, it was like walking into a clean attic. There were no cobwebs. It was all white and bright. So I like logic and I like practical. So you're speaking my language.
Cool. So yeah. So So where do we want to take it today? I'm ready and raring to go.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned in the pre-interview that we did was that there are a lot of business owners who probably are not identifying what their most valuable skill is. And just through observation, I think that's absolutely true. So I would love for you to go down that road for a bit, if you would.
Oh, sure. Happy to. In the very early going, business owners oftentimes fall in love with their product or service more than they fall in love with their client. And what I mean by that is, and this will sound a little counterintuitive, but they'll focus so much on making the best product and making what they think the buyer wants rather than what the buyer wants. And so I just had this conversation recently. I'll give you a case study. I was talking to the owner of a limo company, transportation company, yesterday, and he said, Uber's killing us. And I said, well, yeah, absolutely. Uber is definitely disrupting the marketplace. And he said, and he was in a group of 50 CEOs, and he said, this is a real struggle for me. And he said, we're better than Uber. And I said, okay, well, why are you better than Uber? He says, well, we have Mercedes-Benz and Escalades. Our drivers are well-dressed, whereas an Uber driver could be somebody just coming from work or in civilian clothes. And I said, well, hold on. Stop there. I said, you're selling good-dressed or nicely-dressed drivers, but is that what your clientele is buying? And he said, oh, yeah, they really appreciate that. And I said, really? I said, let's stop for a second. So I asked the rest of the audience, I said, do you care what your driver wears as long as they're well-groomed and well-put together, not wearing anything offensive or not doing, And they said, no, we could care less. I said, so this guy, this owner of this limo company, I said, I'm not suggesting all of a sudden your driver's dressed down by some reason, but you're pinning your financial future on the fact that you think the buyer wants people in a suit. And you're trying to claim that that's why you're worth $20 more per hour or per mile or per ride or whatever. Meanwhile, you have 51 other CEOs in the room telling you they don't care. And you could see the look on his face, and he was like, well, no, it's important. I said, no. You have fallen in love with your product. You're not falling in love with the client. The client is telling you right in front of you what's important to them. And so we continued the conversation, and we used him as a bit of an example. He was a great sport and got great value out of it, I think, in the end. But, we then said, I asked the rest of the audience, I said, you all have taken the limo. Other than the fact that maybe there's leather seats in the limo and not in the Corolla or the Subaru you may have taken in the Uber car, I said, is the in-car experience any better in a limo than it is in an, and they said, no, it's not. It's pretty much the same. The driver's very professional, he's a nice guy or gal, helps me with my luggage, but so does the Uber driver. They help me with my stuff. They're dressed more casual because this is their side hustle, no doubt about it. But once I'm sitting in the car, there's not much of a difference between the two. The Uber driver asks me, would I like the heat on or the air conditioning? Would I like the window on or off? Would I like Wi-Fi? Do I need to plug in my phone? Would you like a bottle of water or a bag of chips? Would you like the window open or down? You guys both do that. There's not much difference between the in-car experience. And so, the limo driver was insisting, oh, no, our in-car experience is better, but he couldn't put his finger on it. And the other owners were saying, and they were really trying to help him. They were saying, listen, dude, you're falling behind here. We're telling you this isn't, and they were really trying to help him. And they said, There's not much difference. And if we are open to you making it a more premium experience, and then we'll use you, but you're not even listening to us. And so as a result,
ouch.
Uber listened. You see what I mean? And so the early on in the game, I think we're so passionate about the work we do or the widget we've created or the service we provide that we fall in love with our product or service more than we fall in love with the client. And once we really understand what the client wants, what's top of mind, and why it's an urgency for them to hire you now, I think you're going to pivot how you service that customer, you're going to pivot that because you're going to realize that the owner, your buyer, wants something different.
I absolutely do understand that. So now that you've gotten, we'll just keep using this case study because I see it all the time in the virtual assistants industry, in the web development industry, in clients that I work with, you know, and I will tell anybody who will listen to me, don't create a course or a product until you have polled your audience. You're going to find out most of the time pretty quickly that what you're offering is just not what they're looking for. So how do you tell people once you've got him on board with saying, okay, now I need to really talk with my clients or my consumers, how does he go about finding out this information and getting it past his little kind of brainwave there, like, no, I've got this, it's all mine. So once you've gotten to that point, where does he go to get this information and then put it into play?
Yeah, it's a great question because, you know, it's a big world out there. And I always said that the internet is free admission to general admission. You know, it's a free path to general admission. And all you've got is the license to walk into the room. But then where do you get all this? You know, where do you get all the exact information you want? So the first thing you need to do is do what we would call an ideal client avatar or ideal client profile. And you'll ask questions like, who's your most likely and best beneficiary of your services? So I've asked my, one time my daughter said, hey dad, who are some people that you really like? And I said, well, Warren Buffett. And she's like, oh, who's that? You know? Later on in that year, around my birthday, she says, Mom, let me hand Dad the gifts. And so she hands me my birthday present, and it's clearly a shirt, a T-shirt. And she had like a disappointed look on her face. And I'm like, is everything okay? She goes, Dad, I didn't think you're gonna like this. I'm nervous. I don't think you're gonna like the gift. And I said, oh, I'm sure I'm gonna like the gift, honey. Why are you worried? She goes, well, there's four random dudes on the T-shirt. I didn't think you wanted a T-shirt with four random dudes on it, right? So my wife rolls her eyes. I open up the bag, and it's a picture of the Beatles.
Oh.
And I said, honey, that's a musical group. That's the Beatles. She goes, oh, the Beatles. You listen to those old dudes. You listen to them all the time. Yeah, exactly. Well, where are they from, you know? And so she just – it was great. So I wear my T-shirt with the four random dudes on there. But you know what? The Beatles, their target audience isn't my 12-year-old. Right.
No.
And so you have to decide who is your target, right? Who is the, who is the most likely person that would willing to value the premium aspects of your service, right? And so if you were talking to kids in high school right now, they're probably not listening to this podcast. You're probably, you know, high potential, high performing achiever types and emulator types, people with the goal to become that. They're your audience. And you say, okay, well, why would they want to hear the guidance on this? What's going on in their life right now? How old are they? Are they male or female? Where do they live? Are they in the suburbs? Are they in the city? Are they in the urban areas? What is their age group? Are they married? Do they have kids? Do they own a home or do they rent a home? It's really good to know these things because when you build out your social media content, I know I'm going all over the place here. Just reel me back
if you need me to. Because this makes perfect sense. And I'm actually having that conversation tonight with a girl who wants to help women. And I said, you've got to narrow it down. She goes, okay, women who have a broken heart. And I said, you've got to narrow it down more. So we'll talk about that too, you know, how we narrow down our niche or our avatar.
Great. And I'll give you three steps in your marketing. Once you identify this person, let's say it's women with a broken heart. So I'm going to guess that it's probably women over a certain age. Many teenage women have a broken heart or have had their heart broken, unfortunately. Well, let's just guess that this is probably from a more significant life partnership or what was going to be a life partnership that she's probably talking to. Well, let's say that's women from, 24 through 39 as an example. Okay, so let's say we've narrowed that down. Then your marketing should follow these three pillars. And what you would first do is you would compose and publish social media, white papers, special reports, ebooks, and repost and talk about video blogs and blogging about what is common interest content to that age group that might have nothing to do with having a broken heart. So if there's somebody who is, you buy your first house at age 32, right? You take on your first debt around that age too. You probably have your first child around that age. So you might start posting things about how to buy a house, what to expect when you're expecting, things that are of common interest. Maybe your niche are foodies, or they like wine, or they work out, or they're into yoga. So you would post things that have nothing to do necessarily with your topic, right? You do common interest because that widens the net and brings in as many people in that target audience as possible. Then the second, and you tell and you educate with common interest information. Then the second step is you start posting comparative information. This is a bit more targeted. Now, comparative information means that you start to post information, what would life be like if you worked with an expert in this area of mending a broken heart versus trying to do it on your own, right? So top 10 ways to choose a relationship coach or a transformation coach or an empowerment coach. DIY recommendations for top 10 books to read if you've just exited a relationship, or top 10 tearjerker movies, top 10 chick flicks, top 10 guy flicks, whatever. Life with me versus life without me as your expert. Okay, and you're educating. You're teaching them as if they're going to go out and do it on their own. And if they're going to start shopping, how to shop and look for that expert. And then the third type of, once you understand your ideal client, the third type of information you post is what we call competitive information. So you started out with common interest, then you go to comparative, life with me, DIY versus with an expert. And then there's competitive, and that's us versus them, meaning let's say I'm a turnaround life coach and I focus on women with a broken heart. I'm a mending a broken heart coach. So here is why I'm better than other mending a broken heart coach. Have you worked with a mending a broken heart coach before and it didn't work out for you? And why was that? Well, here are the things that I do that are different. Here's what distinguishes me in the marketplace. And when you get down to your competitive information, that's when you can put what we call a call to action in there, meaning sign up for my newsletter. Why don't you register for this free webinar? I'm holding an event. I'm Facebook Living it in 1 hour. You name it. There's your asking them to now take an action. Repost this to two people you might know that are in the same boat as you are, that might benefit from a free session with me, a free consultation with me. So you start out, it's tell, tell, sell. So you get into a sequence where you post common interest and you just tell, no selling. Then you do comparative, all telling, no selling. And then your third one is competitive. And that's where you've earned the right now. Now that in this little cycle, I've educated you. I've educated my ideal client. I've given them a ton of valuable and good information. I can now make an ask. I can make a request. Will you please log in, submit, retweet, request, you know, refer, you name it. And so that's not only how you fall in love with the client in the beginning, that's how you start communicating to them in the beginning.
And see, this is really great information because so many people think that they can just, and I know you see it, I see it, it drives me buggy. They'll put up something, a program, they've been coached to possibly do this, and all of a sudden they've got something up. You have no idea who they are. They haven't done any of the work, and I'll be very frank in saying that this is a long game. We are in the know, like, and trust economy, right? People have to know you, be familiar with you, like your personality. In my case, on Facebook, my cats get Christmas cards. I mean, they have to get to know you and understand what it is that you do, what it is that you offer. And until you do that and until you get out there and really kind of put yourself out there and find out what it is that people need from you or want from you, you cannot put together a program, no matter how stellar you think it is, slap it up on Facebook and go, hey, come on, you know, I'm doing some Facebook ads. Come buy this. I've never heard of you. Of course I'm not going to
exactly,
buy it from
you.
And if that's a problem, that's why I call it a long game. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, this is chess, not checkers. Yeah, for sure.
Exactly.
And you have to be very strategic in your moves, and the move you make now, can affect the move you're about to make later. So that's really important that you bear that in mind, is that, you know, people are going to look at your overall body of work, not necessarily just the one post you just made now. You have to earn that right. As a matter of fact, on that point, what you can do, what the audience can do, is give themselves a ranking based on what we're talking about so far. To what degree, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being I've not earned the right to get my client's business at all, 10 is I've totally earned the right because I understand what they want, I've spoken to that, and I have responded to the feedback that I've been given, would be a 10. Rank based on what we're talking about, you know, how much have you earned the right to get their business? And I think most people in the beginning, when they're honest, their scores wouldn't be great. Let's put it that way.
No. And then there's the other side of that, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because there are people like me who are just, for whatever reason, imposter syndrome, or I'm too busy on my client's work to do my own. And I have a ton of stuff that I can put out there, and I don't pull the trigger on it. And there's got to be reason, but let me tell you, I'm listening to your criteria. I have definitely earned the right to ask for sales. I don't know why I don't do it. And I don't think I'm the only one. In fact, I know I'm not. I talk with a lot of people. I have what I call, well, I didn't name it, but we have a girl power tribe, me and two other very strong, very smart women. And we're kicking each other's butts because we're not pulling the trigger. And every one of us has earned the right for those sales, but we're not doing it. So we're having these talks with ourselves, like, what is holding us back? We've identified it. We know what's going on. What's the problem here? So
what's the issue
Do you come across this, or is it just three crazy women? Maybe we should rename our tribe.
No. Well, you've
I'm
asked
not going
a loaded
to,
question
we should.
There. And maybe it's a little of both, Denise. Maybe there's something going on, and maybe there is a crazy tribe. And that would be cool if it was both. But it's all good.
And by
here's
the way,
the deal.
You know there's, one of them, Carl. You know what? Suzanne Lesko is part of my crazy tribe.
Kidding. Then yes, I'm here to verify it is a crazy tribe. So an amazing one, though.
Fantastic.
A crazy one, but amazing one. Oh, that's so great. Oh, tell her I said hello. In sales, think of it this way. In the right now, Denise, what we are doing is we're doing what I would call selling, right? Now, I don't mean selling meaning asking you to buy something. In any sales process, there's the front end of the process and there's a back end of the process. And the front end of the process is what I would call selling, meaning gaining agreement, qualifying the prospect, building the relationship, and really it's a low-risk rapport-building exercise. But then there's the closing. There's the backside of it, which is the closing. Now, while when you're selling, you are building the relationship and you are in rapport, the closing requires you to risk the relationship. And think about it. When you ask somebody to buy from you, you're putting it on risk. Now, think about this. Every guy knows this. Well, every guy learns this. Every woman really knows this. Every guy learns this. Is that, when you're dating somebody, you have to, in order to go to the next level in the relationship, you have to risk the current relationship. So think about it. Imagine there's the person in your life, the man or woman in your life, they get down on their knee, they pull the ring out of their pocket, and they're about to propose marriage. Okay? Now, if you are the recipient of that proposal and your answer is no, right?
Oh, gosh.
Does that mean
happens.
You go back to dating or is it over?
I'd say it was over.
It's over, right?
Yeah.
That's the most common answer. It's over. And so the person who has the ring in their pocket knows that the second the ring comes out of the pocket, and think of this literally, from the time I take the ring out of my pocket to the time I get it to your finger, I have killed the old relationship. It's over.
You've misread the relationship from start to finish.
Could be. Now, I've either misread it but either way, the old relationship's over. We're not going back to dating.
Yeah, no question.
If you say yes, well, now we're engaged. That's the new definition of the relationship, right? And you're now my customer in the engagement, more my partner in the engagement. If you say no, we're not engaged, but no matter what, the second the ring came out of my pocket, we're no longer dating. And that's a big risk. And a lot of people don't like to take that risk, right? So they will say, so giving away content for free is selling, Hey, it's easy. There's no risk. There's no stress.
Right.
I'm not making anybody feel awkward. I'm not putting anybody under pressure. I'm not disturbing anybody. However, an undisturbed prospect will not buy, and an undisturbed client will not change. It is at some point you have to disturb your client. You have to put the relationship at risk in order for them to go to the next level. Otherwise, there's no reason for them to go to the next level. I'm not going to volunteer and send Matt Lauer money for watching the Today Show when I get it free on my TV. However, if I'm a fan of Matt Lauer and the Today Show and they say, hey, guys, we're going to pay-per-view, they take a risk. They take a risk that their viewership is going to go down. Maybe it might go up, but it might go down. But if I'm a big enough fan, I'm going to pay the fee and I'm going to watch the Today Show. But there's a risk. And not a lot of people like to take that risk. So as a result, they stay in the selling mode and they don't embrace the closing road, mode.
They don't pull the trigger on it. Gotcha. And I think that's
they don't
where
pull
we
the trigger
are
on
all right now. We're like, we got this. We know our stuff, and we do. You ought to hear some of these conversations. They are high-level conversations. We record them because, they're seriously brilliant. And we go back, and we haven't done a thing. And say, all right, ladies, now what is holding us up? So you're speaking my language. You definitely are.
Yeah, I would even volunteer that you may want to change the question from what's holding us up to what is the most uncomfortable thing that we can commit to right now that will get us our result as quickly as possible.
Oh, I love that. And I'm going to tell Suzanne, you made me do it, just so you know.
Yeah. you make the snowball, I'll throw it.
There you go.
I love it. Yeah. So, this all comes back. The original question was, what does somebody need to make sure that they're doing in the early going, and what's the more critical skill. And it's the skill of influence and the skill of understanding who your clientele is and making sure that you are willing to sell your product or service to the client on a regular basis, and you'll do it in the face of any objections that you get. At the end of the day, that's really it. One of the more important skills you need to be able to manage is your ability to generate leads and then sell, because nothing happens in your business until you start selling. A lot of terms for it, rainmaking, you name it, but nothing happens until that point. And the reality is, if you're in business to serve others, I totally respect that. I understand where you're coming from. I respect the fact that that's where you're at in your life. However, there's a bit of a contradiction here. Here's the problem. The problem is that there is no life of abundance that includes financial scarcity. In order to be an abundant leader, an abundant service provider, an abundant client, an abundant person, you have to be abundant in all areas. And there's this feeling that if I focus on money or profit or material possessions, then I can't be spiritual. Well, that's baloney. I don't believe that for a second. No life of abundance includes relationship scarcity or financial scarcity or health scarcity or fitness scarcity or social scarcity. A life of abundance means abundance. You don't get to pick and choose, I'll just be abundant in this area, but I'm going to be scarce in other areas, and then I'm going to call myself abundant. Doesn't work that way.
That is just way too logical. You may want to rethink that.
I'm putting pressure on the team.
I'm going to catch so much hell for this. But this is you're exactly right. Abundance means that you're supposed to, in my view, you're supposed to live the best life you possibly can. And that doesn't mean giving everything away and walking around in sackcloth. I mean, that's, some people can do it. I'm not one of them. Abundance to me means that I can help other people. I can ask them to help me. I can pay them. I live, have a wonderful home. I have a gorgeous backyard, which is my sanctuary. That's abundance to me. My health is good.
I'm not
going to pick and choose. Trust me. And you're right. And I hadn't thought of it like that, but I do see people doing that. And I can't imagine they're doing it deliberately.
Right, and I don't want to make it sound as though abundance is a destination, and if you don't hit it, you're not abundant. And everybody has their own definition of what that means.
Yeah, for
right,
me it's
a mindset.
Mindset.
You yeah, as long as you're pursuing it, as long as you're going for it, right? So if your team says, well, we haven't brought in a lot of money, maybe because we haven't been good or at converting, or we need to increase our skills or education, that's still abundant thinking and you're pursuing it. You just haven't hit the mark yet. I mean, I've tried many things and it hasn't worked out. It doesn't make me scarcity minded. I'm still abundance minded, but maybe I just need to get better at what I'm doing. Like you said, it's the two things you can control in your business are, and your life for that matter, are effort and attitude. And if you have the abundance attitude and you put in the effort to get there, if you follow those two principles going forward, you're going to win the game at some point. My belief is that everyone has everything they need within them, and if they don't now, they'll find it, right? Because people are very resourceful. So you will win the game, whatever your definition of the game is, at some point, because you're too skilled.
If you keep
not
going
to.
You have to keep going, right? Though
yeah,
that's
I remember
brilliant.
Being at a I remember being at a training, and it was we were training corporate executives who wanted to become business advisors, and they were not salespeople, and they had to go out and sell. And they were really worried about, well, what are my chances for success? And I remember a guy putting a grid, this mathematical grid, a probability grid up that said, what's the probability you'll succeed? And he said, you know, you have to go out and meet with a number of people and, you know, propose your service, and some people say yes and some people say no. And they said, what's the probability that in the first 10 chances you will get a client? And he shows this this little algorithm, and he says, your probability is actually pretty low that you will get a client, because this is new to you. You might not be great at it, and or might not have the confidence level, and it'll show. So you may not be as successful as you would like in the first 10. And then he said, the magic number is 60. And he shows the algorithm, and he says, if you were to try this sales methodology 60 times, what's the likelihood you would not have a client? And the likelihood that you would do something 60 times and not get your result is almost nil. It's almost impossible to not be successful if you try it enough. Now, there's some implication there. You learn from your mistakes. You don't keep repeating the same mistake over and over again, right? You don't keep driving east looking for a sunset 60 times and thinking you're eventually going to get there. You, at some point, you pivot and say, hey, wait a minute, it's over our shoulder. Maybe we should turn around, you know? But so you'll figure that part out. But the chances that you would undertake something in your business and do it enough, learn from your mistakes, continuously improve, and not become successful is almost nil, right? So in other words, keep trying, keep pivoting, keep working at it, and you will find the success that you desire. You just got to stay on it.
So something just popped into my head while you were saying that, because, you know, any salesperson is told, I think, you know, by their trainers, you have to make this many cold calls. And I don't know anybody who wants to cold call anything at any time, but I've always heard that you have to make so many calls per day, per week. And this is probably why. This is probably, you know, part of that mindset. Yeah. Just keep doing it. That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I won't do it, but it's not my thing. But I've often heard from salespeople, oh, they want me to make 50 calls. It's like, well, why? And they never could give me a reason why. So maybe that's just bad training from somebody. Yeah. But now that you've explained that, I just, light bulb moment, it just went off.
Right. And think about it. Imagine for a moment, everything you held near and dear to your heart was at risk. Your savings, your garden, your family, your all of your cash, your faith, your friends, all your kids, all of it. And I said, the only way you get it all back is if you do these 50 sales calls and you come back with a client. What are the chances you wouldn't come back with a client? You would absolutely do it. If there was enough leverage,
yeah,
you'd make it happen.
Yeah.
There's no question in my mind, right? So when I ask that question to everybody, they're like, oh, my God, I would absolutely get a client. I said, all right. So I had to put you under all of that pressure in order for you to take on the activity, and you know you would be successful. So let's just remove the pressure. How about you just do this without the pressure? You know, and this is where, as humans, we get ourselves in trouble. Yeah, exactly. We, you know, I don't know, if I'm not under pressure, then I'm not going to make the calls. But you put me under pressure. And so a lot of people say, well, I don't like to be pushy as a salesperson. I don't like to be sold. But most people have created their own problem here, because they don't move until they get pressure, one way or the other, either sell or buy. And so the reason why sometimes pushy salespeople are successful, oftentimes they are, is because they push you to be uncomfortable, and you make the purchase. And so you've set that up on your own. If you would take action when you weren't under pressure or under stress, then you could have a very stress-free business development process. But if you wait till the last minute when you're under pressure, or the mortgage is due and you can't pay it, now you're under pressure, and I, quote unquote, hate sales. No, you just waited too long to start.
Right. I have said all of my life I hate sales, and I have been told more than once that I'm a natural salesperson. And I told this to Ben Gay the Third. I said, you know, one of the most offended I ever was years ago when somebody looked me in the eye and said, you know, you're a natural salesperson. And I remember looking at this man and going, I don't think I like you. I mean, I was really not happy. but then I was quite young at the time, but you know, we're all salespeople. I mean, if you want to watch a sales expert in action, watch a 3-year-old get his or her own way. They almost never fail, right? But they're pushy, they're focused, they know precisely what they want, when they want it, where, I mean, they don't lose focus. And I think that's where a lot of us just fail. We have to understand that we're selling all the time. I mean, we're selling on our resumes, we're selling when we're dating, we're selling at the grocery store when you're trying to get the checkout clerk to, you know, give you a coupon or something. We're always selling. We're always exchanging something for something, right? And that's what sales is.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, if you think about that, all a sale is the exchange of value and getting somebody to be influenced to your point of view. And I agree with you totally. As adults, kids don't get hung up on it quite as much, but adults get hung up on it a little bit more is, you know, what tags along with them whenever they go on a sales call, and what luggage they bring, that baggage and that luggage of, what if I fail? What will people think of me? Do I really deserve this? And there's a lot of emotional clutter that enters the conversation. As a matter of fact, for a 15-year period, I was the mentoring director of a global institute called the Institute for Independent Business. And we mentored the launch of 5,000 consultancies in 35 countries. And part of what we would do is we would assign them a telemarketer who would set 10 appointments with business owners who said that they wanted to grow and wanted to work with an advisor. And so the advisor would go out and go through this scripted process and then would try to sell their services. And the methodology was a one call close. And the consulting package was a $30,000 consulting package, paid $2,500 per month for a year. And you were supposed to walk out of there with a 2 months deposit, this month plus next, because it's a retainer. We start now, and your next check covers your next month. So you're supposed to walk out of there with a $5,000 retainer, and you're supposed to sell your business advisory services. Well, we did a study on all of the people who went O for their first 10. And the study was remarkable in what we found. And the most common one that's relevant for today is, we asked them, anyone who went on 10 appointments, made no sales, we said, what are your hang-ups about the program? Like, what do you not like about the service you're selling? Well, when I was an executive, I would never buy a consulting package on the first meeting, right? Because it was a first call close. I said, okay, that's good. So mark that. And then we would say, what else? They said, well, this is very, really expensive. You know, $30,000 for me to just talk to somebody and be their coach. You know, I'm not delivering a business plan or something, you know, a spreadsheet of some sort. Okay, what else? Well, I don't like some of the language in the scripting. Okay, what else? Well, you know what? I haven't been doing this all that long. And in the script, it says that I'm a seasoned executive and advisor. Well, I'm a seasoned executive, but not an advisor. And interestingly enough, we would take what was their hang up about their own product or service, and then we would ask, what are the objections you're getting in the meetings? Well, the guy who says, or the gal who says, this was too much money, guess what their number one objection they were getting in their meetings was?
They didn't believe in the product enough to sell it, right?
Right. And
you have to believe in what you're selling. You have to deeply believe in it.
Right on. Right on. And so they, so the person who thought it was too expensive, they were getting the price objection, like, wow, this sounds awfully
right.
expensive. And then the person would come back and say, see, I told you it was too much money, and I'm getting this objection over and over and over again. Well, there's a there was a study done some years ago, and if you want to look up emotional sharing, where if somebody is passionate about a particular idea. This is what they did, actually. They had somebody, they had put somebody in a room, and they asked them to just sit down, look at your paper with a pen and paper, and just start writing whatever's on your mind. And then they would have somebody else walk into the room, not make eye contact, sit right across them at the table, and start writing what they, writing whatever was on their mind on their paper. Well, the second person who came in and started writing something new, after a period of time, the person who was already in the room started writing the same things or similar things to the person who entered the room later. And they made the conclusion that we share thought. We share emotions. So if you are a salesperson and you walk into a room and you have the objection that it's too much money, then guess what? You're transferring that over to the buyer. So when you're selling and you have a fear, it will become the objection of your buyer. So whose objections are you handling in the meeting, really? Are they the buyer's or are they yours? And what we've concluded in the study was that you are burdening your prospect with your own objections. They might not even be theirs. And so we're making the job for each other harder because we are making the prospect manage the salesperson emotionally in their own sales call. It's crazy, you know? And you're right.
I've witnessed that. I mean, I've caught myself doing it, you know, because if you're aware of what you're saying and thinking and you're following your own flight path, if you will, after a while you kind of go, what the heck did I just say there? And it's not necessarily something you just said. It's the way you said it. And people, you know,
right.
We all have spidey sense, right? We're listening a lot of times to what you're not saying.
Exactly. And they, and the spidey sense says, I pick up on what you're feeling and I'm hearing what you're saying. And if there's a disconnect between the two, like you're saying, we've got the best product, but your body language is saying, no, we don't. And I'm really nervous about this product. You know, they pick up on that and they don't, they can't, articulate it maybe, the buyer, but the confused mind says no if you're a buyer. And if your body language and verbal language do not align, then you confuse me. Do you want to sell to me or do you not? Well, while you're trying to figure it out there, salesperson, I will wait or I'll go shopping somewhere else. But the person who's passionate, who comes out and says, you know what, there's no better place to for you to be than with me and my company, and our products are awesome. You know what, I got to tell you, our products aren't perfect, and there's no product that's perfect. But our company is so good at making it right for you that even if there's a problem, we're going to do everything we can to make it right. So we're all human. We all make mistakes. And you know what? I'll tell you what. We are going to make mistakes with you, but we're going to work our tails off to make sure we make it right. Is that fair enough? Right?
That's what I tell my clients. I mean, I'm really good at what I do, and I'm proud of what I do. Crap happens. I've got a project going on right now that, through honestly no fault of my own, it's a huge technical mess up with their hosting company. I was up until 2 o'clock this morning finding a workaround. You've got to be able to do that. You have to be able to pivot.
Yep. Yeah,
you've also got to be able to assure your client that, look, I've got your back. I mean, if this is, yeah. I would love for this to be a seamless process. Chances are it's not going to be. But if it blows up like it did yesterday, I'm not going to bed until we've got it fixed.
Right, right. Exactly. And, you know, we've all been to the restaurant where the food was late or they bought the wrong thing.
Right.
We all went to the gas station. Well, I live in New Jersey, so they still pump the gas for you in New Jersey. But maybe we all haven't done this one. But in New Oh yeah. There's only two left. I thought there was three. There was Hawaii, Oregon, and New Jersey. And I think Hawaii or Oregon doesn't do it anymore. But yeah. of the many reasons why you should move to New Jersey, Denise, you should do it because they pump the gas for you.
Yeah, but they don't speak Southern. I don't know if I could survive.
Just go to South Jersey. They speak something down there.
I know. I've heard it. I don't understand it. We can't communicate.
Yeah. In the bottom half of the state, everyone sounds like they're much more from Philadelphia. And from the mid to the northern part of the state, we sound like we're more from New York or Staten Island. There are exactly two distinct Jersey accents for those that are, those that have encountered us. But everywhere in the state, they pump the gas for you. It's a wonderful thing. Pull in. So what I was going to say was I've ordered 93 octane and I've gotten 89 octane, right? But you know what? You come in there next time like, hey, so sorry about that last time. You know, don't know what I was thinking, right? As long as they acknowledge it and as long as they, you know, what can I do for you? You always come in here and you can buy a bottle of water from the convenience store. You know, this bottle of water is on me. So sorry for last time around, you know? And as long as you just show that you are genuinely interested, genuinely care, and you truly are committed to serving, the customer's going to give you a pass. But when it comes in the beginning, you must be so passionate, and you must feel almost a moral obligation to close the client into your services or products. Because if they are saying that's what they need and it's what you provide, you have to hold out the belief that you're the best option for them, right? There's no
really
better place to be,
right?
Or I'm going to make it the best thing for you. So you have to go in with that conviction, because the amount of rejection you get and the amount of objections you get and the questioning that you get from the marketplace can be overwhelming. And if there's a little bit of a crack in your commitment, it'll show. And buyers are smart. You know, they can see a crack in the armor. And if they say, well, if you're not committed to selling, I'm not committed to buying. Why
should
I be?
And they can do it over the phone. I mean, seriously, people can tell if you're low level or not really committed during a phone conversation. Truly.
Yeah. There's no doubt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does the buyer or the prospect have to drag the salesperson through the conversation? And I've been on these calls. Like, I'm one of these guys. So here's what I do for fun. This is the other reason why you have to move up here. I'm just kidding.
There's no crawfish or crabs or alligator meat. I don't think so. You know, I have needs.
Well, we'll have to have it imported up for you.
There you go.
I'm one of those guys where I will take the telemarketer's call, and I go in the reverse. I say to them, all right, I respect the fact that you're calling me. So I say that they come on the phone, they're like, is this Carol Gould? You know, they always mispronounce your name. And are you the owner or dear friend? You know, that sort of thing.
Oh,
and I'll say, yeah, it's Carl. How you doing? Well, we do, I don't know, SEO. Fantastic. I'm in the market. What do you got? And they don't know, and I want to test if they're ready. And they're like, well, Mr. Gould, what we do, I know what you do. I saw it on the ID. It came up as ABC SEO company. I need that. Tell me what you got. And they, you know, enlighten me. What am I doing wrong? We've checked your website, and I know, and it stinks. I'm here to tell you, my website stinks. How can you help me? And I'm testing to see if they're ready. And if they're actually ready, I'll listen to their offer. But I'll tell them, I said, call me back when you're ready. You're not ready for this conversation. Because it was some auto dial. Try it sometime. It's
right.
A blast. I have fun with it. You know, just pick up and just say, I'm a fan of what you do. Tell me how I can advance my business. Give me your deal and I'm ready. I'm a ready buyer. They have no idea what to do with that. You get a telemarketer off the call faster.
Oh, see, me saying bad words to them and impugning their mother's virtue is not the way to go.
You could, but why go down that road? Try
a
different way. Take a different path, Denise. Yeah, yeah. you know, have a little bit of fun with them. So I say, okay, great. You're trying to advance your business. All right, cool. But if you've done that, you darn well better be ready when you get on the phone with me, because who wouldn't think about it? Who wouldn't want more clients and customers coming to their website? We'd all want that. So if you're calling me to send me more leads, great. Tell me the program. And the reality is most of them can't. Right? If you're telling me that if I buy your service, you're going to do affinity marketing for me and send out postcards and all of my clients are going to be happy, great. Give me your program. Who wouldn't want more happy clients? So if you have a program that meets my needs and it's reasonable and I get an ROI, I'm in. So I just start there. I say, I'm in. Tell me what you got. And so few of them are like, whew, I think they get off the call with me and they're like, oh, I need a break.
But I might have learned some lessons. I wonder if they, you know, eventually, you know, because our lessons, I find in my life anyway, are not learned immediately, almost never. They have to kind of percolate and kick around in my little pea brain. And after a while, I'm like, oh, well, there it is. And it could be after a long while, but, you know, the lesson always does show up.
It sure does. Sure does, you know? So
interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
I had someone call me yesterday.
Yeah, I just take a slightly different tactic.
I'm going to try that. I had this was an overseas call, and I picked it up just for the pure heck of it. I needed a break, and I had a nice little chat with this guy. I don't think he likes Americans anymore, though.
I'm not
American
calling those
women,
people.
Anyway.
They're so right.
She's rude.
She must be part of that club I keep hearing about.
I know. I think so. Can you believe that
I keep hearing about?
Yeah, we are a girl power tribe, I'm telling you. We have 4 minutes. I'm telling you, this is the quickest 60 minutes on the web. Carl, is there one strategy or a recipe that if business owners and their teams would consistently apply every day would really help them? Or have we already talked about that? Because we've talked about a lot and it's been fascinating.
Great. So here, especially early on in the game, here's one of the things that you can always stay a step in front of the competition. As a matter of fact, in our way of thinking, this eliminates the competition. And if you go to work every single day with this commitment, I think you will eliminate your competition, stay ahead of them, and you'll be a market leader. And we tell our clients to make the promise or the guarantee to their clients that nobody else in their niche has the guts to make. Okay? So what that means is when you go to your industry trade shows every year, you go to your industry events, you go to your chapter meetings, and everybody knows what the problems are. Right? Everybody knows what the top five complaints are in the industry. They know what customers call for, but the most providers don't want to do it, like the legal industry. You know, every lawyer knows that their clients would like a guarantee, but no lawyer really has the guts to give a guarantee. Oh, my clients won't take advantage of it, right? In an industry where shipping is a big part of the industry, everybody knows the client wants free shipping, but nobody has the guts to actually offer it. So if you sit down and say, what are the top five complaints of my industry? I'm going to find out which of those we can fix, and we're going to make the offer or the guarantee that none of our colleagues have the guts to make. Not that they're not stupid or you're taking unnecessary risk, but they're afraid they can't meet that promise, but they don't have the guts to make it. You will always stay in front of your competitor. You will eliminate them, and even better, Denise, you can charge a premium for that option if people opt into that level, that promise option or that guaranteed program.
Exactly. And I see that quite a bit. I operate that way, to be honest with you. You know, we were talking earlier about, you know, you were sharing the study where one person was writing, then another person came in and started writing. And Carl, there are no accidents. Truly, they're not. Last night, I was having a big conversation with a friend of mine, and we were talking about something very, very similar, but we were talking about resonant frequencies, you know, how we're all connected, how there's, you know, it's a bigger intellect that we all have, we can tap into. So, and here we are talking about the same thing today with no plan for doing that at all.
There you go. We ended up there.
We did. Listen, before we go, can you tell people where they can find you on the web?
Sure. You can go to carlgould.com. That's the quickest and easiest way to find me. And we do have a gift for your audience if they'd like to take us up on it. I'm the author of Seven Stages of Small Business Success, a best-selling book that we put out. And if your listeners want to go to our short code, 26786, and type in hypergrowth, they'll get a free copy of our book. So 26786, and type in hypergrowth. Now your iPhone's going to want to make that two words. It's one word.
Right.
One word, hypergrowth, and 26786. And they'll get a free copy of the book.
I will be texting you in just a few minutes. Well, listen, thank you. Hang on just a second. I think we might have. Are we still there, Carl? Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay. I'm hearing odd beepings and mutterings in my headphone. It's like, oh, no,
right.
One more tech problem. But anyway, I wanted to thank you so much for being with me here today. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I really thank you for all the wonderful tips and advice that you've shared with our audience, and I want people to go grab that book. And today's episode was sponsored by my company, Your Office on the Web. If you are looking for full-on business creation services such as web development, virtual assistants, online business management, social media marketing, and so much more, honestly, so much more, please visit yourofficeontheweb.com. And be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Carl, thank you so much. It has been an enormous pleasure chatting with you today.
Oh, thanks so much. It's been great.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.